Finvold Financial Group.
Hour two of your Friday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. The Friday Roundtable featuring Representative Nick Zerwas and producer Sam Sansevier is in the house. They will be your contestants, including Eric Nordquist, Nordo, from our sister station KFAN, producer of Paul Allen's 9 to Noon program, will be joining them, participating and competing in the Friday News Quiz. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter to start predicting who you think will be the winner. And we've got some fabulous prizes lined up, I understand, for the potential winner.
We do. I don't have all the information in front of me, though. So,
All right. Well, yeah. I just heard they're fantastic.
They are. They actually are fantastic. But I will have that information for you shortly.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, yeah.
Remember last week?
No, I completely forgot everything that happened last week, so.
I do. I remember.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Zerwas mopped the floor with in the Friday News Quiz, I believe setting or tying an all-time record for points scored with a 20-point victory.
I don't know if that's... Did he get 20 points?
Yeah. No, I destroyed you.
I don't remember that.
I do.
A little bit later on in the hour, we do have some Ilhan Omar talk. Also, we'll get into the slow transformation of a driverless Minneapolis, you know, is continuing.
So,
They're building a carless Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Going driverless.
Well, driverless, carless, that kind of thing. We've got Minneapolis Park Board is going to be forcing traffic to take detours. We'll tell you where, and we also have a scooter update too, because now that the weather has made it more safer, right? More comfortable to ride a scooter around.
Desirable.
The dangers are certainly popping up in the news stories.
I do have to issue a retraction. Nick, you did not set a record last week. The record is 20. It is 20, set by Brian Miller. You had 18 points last week.
Oh, so close.
You were very close. We'll see if we can shatter that record this week.
How many points did Sam have last week?
Oh, I don't keep track of second place points.
I think it was like 3.
No, it wasn't.
Yesterday,
it was at least 10.
She got outscored by Corey.
That's not true.
That's embarrassing.
Yesterday, I think it was yesterday or the day before, something odd happened. Drew ended up agreeing with something that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez put out on Twitter.
That is, agreeing in a sense. She had tweeted that Paul Manafort is being tortured, you know, and I do that thing with my fingers, by being placed in solitary confinement, and that he, and then she added, and all others should be released from solitary confinement. I don't know that I would go that far. I think it is absolutely laughable. It's not even laughable, is not the right word. It's embarrassing. And it's wrong that somebody, you know, like Paul Manafort, who there's no indication he's a threat to anybody, you know, a physical threat of by any means, is placed in solitary confinement. But I do agree with her in the sense that, you know, the solitary confinement is grossly overused. I don't know enough, and I have not researched enough about it to sit here and say that I think it should be abolished. I certainly am open to the argument that there is a place for it, but I do believe that it is widely overused, and that and I know that Representative Zerwas, you have been sort of leading an effort on reform here in the state of Minnesota. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I think the first thing to think about is the kind of interplay or interchangeability of terminology. It's like you have solitary confinement, you have segregated housing, and you have protective custody. And those three often are used interchangeably, while in different prisons, in different prison systems, they mean totally different things. My understanding from looking in to the Paul Manafort case, he's being transferred to Rikers Island, not a super fantastic jail,
right?
in New York. And my understanding is he is being provided a single cell as a part of their administrative segregation or protective custody program.
Okay.
They're isolating him from everyone else because they think he's going to get shanked and killed.
Ugh.
So, I mean, that's...
Sure.
So we have to...
A protectionary measure than it is anything else.
So we have to... I think we have to be very cautious of the terminology and the different things that that means. Now, when I worked down in Minnesota around solitary confinement and reforms around solitary confinement, it's interesting because I've had very conservative Republicans just 100% totally disagree with my approach to reforming solitary confinement.
Based on what?
If you are a bad person and you commit crimes and then you act out in jail, then, you know, give them hell, throw the book at them, lock them up.
But there are other ways and other methods that prisons can use to mete out consequences for bad behavior other than solitary confinement, right?
And my point is, in the state of Minnesota, a non-death penalty state, the use of solitary confinement is the most punitive, restrictive thing the state can do to punish a human being.
Okay.
And up until it was signed into law 2 weeks ago, the state of Minnesota had no statutory authority to even use solitary confinement. The Department of Corrections was doing it, but was doing it without explicit statutory authority to do so. And so my bill provides the Department of Corrections the ability and the legal right to use solitary confinement. And what it does, pretty simply, is it says that the individual will be checked in on. If their mental health deteriorates, they will be provided mental health care. If their mental health after a certain amount of time doesn't improve, they will be removed from solitary confinement to go to hospital level psychiatric care. And that apart from that mental health aspect, everything else in solitary confinement remains the same, except that there is check-ins. And so at 30 days and at 90 days, the information of their solitary confinement is moved up to the Department of Corrections commissioner. And that at 90 days, in order to hold someone in solitary confinement for longer than 90 days, there has to be an approved by the commissioner plan that they, with criteria that the individual needs to meet in order to get out of solitary confinement. So a performance improvement plan, basically.
90 days does seem excessively long to me, though. I mean, do you have any information on what a sort of standard or average time spent in solitary confinement is?
Well, and that's what's so shocking, or at least it was to me. 3.5 years ago, when I first kind of turned on to this issue, was following the Star Tribune series that they did investigating solitary confinement. And in that series, what they illustrated was numerous convicts that were spending 900 days in solitary confinement.
My God.
And in multiple instances, after 900 days in solitary confinement, their sentence expiring and then being released directly onto the street.
No.
How does nobody see the danger in that?
That is a horrible, horrible, horrible idea.
And then we're super shocked when, oh boy, they didn't transition well and ended up back in prison.
We didn't rehabilitate them.
What are the odds?
Are you kidding me?
So, one of the reforms that happens is that it also prohibits the Department of Corrections from keeping someone in solitary confinement and releasing them directly in out into the general public. And so that they must go out, show that they can operate in general population before they're released from prison. So this is for me, it's a big deal. I've been working on it for 3.5 years. I understand that there are some individuals that, you know, are really much just prisons there to punish. And if you can't operate appropriately in prison, then throw the book at them and yada, yada, yada. My point is, this is the most punitive thing the state of Minnesota can do to a citizen.
Yeah, there need to be some...
Do we have to put guardrails on?
Yes, there needs to be some statutes dictating how it's used and how when under what appropriate circumstances can it be used, and by no means should anybody be spending, you know, anything near that amount of time. 90 days to me seems exceedingly excessive. And, you know, to hear that some people spent well over 100, 200, 300 days in solitary confinement, I mean, you are essentially breaking that person. I mean, you are just, there's no other way to describe it other than you are mentally breaking that individual. And I don't understand the point of that.
Now, to be fair, and the one thing I'll say is nothing in my bill, nothing in state law now prevents a prison from keeping someone in solitary confinement for as long as humanly necessary.
Now, that should be the next thing we work on.
Well, but in order to provide for safety of other inmates.
Yeah. That's different.
So
that's
different. So we do have individuals.
There's protective custody, but then there's punitive custody.
We do have individuals in our Department of Correction system that, surprise, surprise, cannot play well with others. Mm-hmm. And they will attack guards. They will attack other inmates. Mm-hmm. They'll be very, very violent at any opportunity that they have. Now, I would argue that at the root of many of those instances is significant, severe, and pervasive untreated mental health conditions.
I don't think there's anybody that would argue with you on that.
But that being said, nothing in the legislation that we passed would prevent the Department of Correction in those instances to identify those individuals, report that up to the Commissioner of Corrections, have the Commissioner of Corrections accountable for that decision, and keep that person segregated and restricted. The challenge is, prior to this, and following on the heels of the Star Tribune story, the lack of accountability within the Department of Corrections and the use of solitary confinement was staggering. Mm-hmm. When I started reaching out to the DOC following the Star Tribune report saying, hey, Andy Mannix from the Star Tribune is reporting this. Give me the data. Is this accurate? For 3 years, I heard back from the Department of Corrections, oh, we don't keep data on that.
What?
We don't have stats on that. We don't have any information to provide you. And so, being from the legislature with a role in statute to oversee and have regulatory oversight over the Department of Corrections, when I served on the Public Safety Committee and now when I serve on the Correction Subcommittee, they couldn't provide me, a member of the legislature, with the base data to even do that oversight. Huge problem. The legislation that was signed into law 2 weeks ago now requires the Department of Correction to, in very common sense fashion, keep track of that data and report it back to the legislature.
Doesn't seem like that should be too difficult.
Well, it seems
or even remotely controversial. Did you get pushback?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, Governor Dayton's Commissioner of Corrections vehemently opposed my bill for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And would not support it and was not passed into law. Mm-hmm. It took the new Commissioner of Corrections, Commissioner Schnell, who, when I met with him and laid out what I was trying to accomplish, that's how we moved this bill forward, because the current Commissioner of Corrections finally supported it.
What was the primary rationale for the former Commissioner of Corrections under Dayton as to why they were opposing it?
You know, it was a moving target. Too much work, too expensive, didn't want to do it. I mean, it just...
Well, good work, and thank you, you know, for leading an effort on this cause and being so, you know, vigilant about it, you know, working on it for 3 years. You know, I mean, it's a tough thing to get bills passed sometimes, especially, you know, when you've got a governor from the other party. You know, a lot of times that enough, even if it's a good idea, is enough to prevent it from getting passed. So kudos to you. Kudos to Governor Walz for signing this into law.
We're going to do a ceremonial bill signing next week.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that. And the reality
while you're there, let him know that you're not going to ask for a gas tax next year.
What the hell is he thinking?
Will you just like lean over and be like, "Hey, Governor, you know, thanks for signing this bill and everything, but we still don't want a gas tax."
Yeah,
Nobody does. This just in.
Coming up, Minneapolis Park Board considers forcing traffic to take detours. We'll tell you where. Also, U.S. boom in electric scooters leads to more injuries and deaths. And we have brand new Amy Klobuchar audio to share with you.
Yeah.
Very excited to share new,
it's
hot from the campaign trail, Amy Klobuchar audio.
Nothing you've ever heard before.
No.
The other time.
And 103.5 FM.
one 989 5855 is the phone number. You want to take part in the program with the Friday Roundtable. Representative Nick Zarwas, producer Sam Santavir, and the Friday News Quiz coming up. Your prize, if you correctly predict the winner between Nick Zarwas, Sam Santavir, and joining us later, it will be Eric Nordquist from KFAN, is a pair of tickets to see Joe Rogan. He's coming to the XL Energy Center on September 14th.
Nice.
Yeah, he's funny.
Now,
he's funny. He's got a couple of good Netflix specials.
I don't mean to be like this, but is he sell out the XL Energy Center?
We'll find out, I suppose. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 11 a.m., so
he's funny.
We'll find out, yeah.
I didn't know he was stadium funny.
He's I mean, he's between, you know, he was on news radio.
Yeah.
I think that might be the only sitcom he's been on, but he's
Fear Factor
radio. Yeah, Fear Factor.
Well, yeah.
He MMA, hosted Fear Factor for a long time. He still is, you know, big in the MMA, the UFC community. He does play by play color announcing for UFC, and his podcast is huge. I mean, it's one of the most popular podcasts out there.
It's ridiculously popular.
And I've tried to listen to it, but the problem is they're all like 3 hours long.
Oof.
Yeah, they're very long episodes, and I'm never in the car. that's like a month worth of commutes for me. Like, I would start one, I would be done in August.
Nobody likes a bragger, okay?
Yeah, that's like five commutes for me, maybe.
I was going to say, that's like 3 days.
I wasn't bragging, I was just stating. No, I don't spend that much time in the vehicle.
That is 3 hours, that is literally a day for me. So
I'm very fortunate in that I get to come to and leave work at a time when there is no traffic on the roads, and I do not live that far away.
Well, and the problem with long podcasts like that, you know, I mean, it's you've got the time, right, to go and listen to them, but it's that those types, and especially a show like Joe Rogan's, is incredibly popular because he's built up a large audience, and so, you know, I'm sure that they all do tune into all of it or download and listen to all of it. But the problem with podcasts like that, if you're not familiar with the individual, you know, oftentimes you got to wait until you get like an hour and 15 in until there's something like really, really good you want to hear. And it's like, I don't have a mic with you.
Yeah.
I've got a whole bunch of other podcasts that I like to go and listen to. So.
Yes. That's 3 hours is a bit more of a time commitment than I'm willing to make for most podcasts. But Joe Rogan, exceedingly popular. I mean, he's very, I kind of hope my wife isn't listening because she loves him. And I'm going to have to find tickets. And if she's aware he's coming to town.
All right, let's.
I pick Nick.
I don't have any tickets.
I'm picking you to win the news quiz.
Whoa!
And I'm sorry.
That's a safe.
I mean, based on his performance last week, it's hard to bet against him.
That was,
that's
what?
A pretty safe bet.
No, pick me.
I'm what they call in the business.
I pick Nick, and I give him 20 arbitrary points.
What? I'm in the business. What they
think is rigged.
Hey, sure thing.
All right, let's go here.
This is rigged.
Before we dive into this article, real quick, we do have a 11 seconds of audio to play for you. Amy Klobuchar is still out on the campaign trail trying to increase her single-digit polling numbers in the 2020 Democratic presidential primary race. And in front of a very small crowd, look, it was at a bar, like a little bar area.
Little
people crowded around, a little brick wall in the background.
Like six people in the shot with her. Yeah. I'm sure there were more in the room, but,
We're now clearly at the point where, as someone that's done some of this campaigning and stuff on a much, much smaller scale, I'm starting to feel real bad for
him. Yeah, I'm not. It's because of clips like this.
So people say we have one goal, and that is having someone that can win, right? It's where you're supposed to come.
She did it again!
That's
this is where you're supposed to clap.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
And now, Nick, you've given plenty of speeches. You've talked to BPOUs. You've stumped, right? And I'm sure you've got a few applause lines, you know, banked away. Like, I, you know, say this. What do you do? And I'm sure it's happened. What do you do when you throw out the applause line or the laugh line, whatever it may be?
And it goes flat.
And you pause and you wait and nothing happens.
Immediately revert back to something about Mark Dayton.
See, that works. That totally worked just now.
Yeah, well, that's
the point is, you just move on.
You don't.
Yeah. You don't draw attention.
You don't pull a Jeb Bush. That's a Jeb Bush, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh.
Yep. It makes me wonder, like, how long this has been going on now, and it just hasn't been caught on video. I mean, obviously, now we have two instances of Amy Klobuchar. This is, we have the, you know, this is when you, please, this is when you're supposed to clap, and then from the Fox News town hall a few weeks ago.
It's when you guys are supposed to cheer. You
know, and that just sounds aggressive.
Right, yeah, this, you will cheer.
Well, and
so she's been doing, this is clearly not the first and only second time that this has happened and that she's pulled this, right?
And it speaks to the expectation, right? It speaks, I've done a lot of public speaking and never have gone into it with any expectation of receiving an applause for anything that I'm going to say. Right. I just have never, even when I've done like keynote speeches and I've actually written it out, there was never an expectation of, oh, this is going to kill. I'm going to get a cheer. So when it comes to like the Jeb Bush or in this case, you know, more recently, Amy Klobuchar, to me, it speaks to, no, man, you're going into this expecting that this is going to lead to this outpouring of clapping and emotion. And it just, are you writing your whole speech that way?
Well, and the challenge is in political speech. Just human nature. If you give a speech and you inflect your voice and you pause, human nature is to fill the void.
Right. The applause or laughter, depending on whatever is appropriate.
And then normally you have people there that will start the applause at the right points. You know what I mean? I mean, it's...
Yeah. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. But normally, you're right. I mean, she's got staffers
there who you hit your applause line.
Yeah.
They should know when her applause pauses are coming. Are they just too, like, you know, petrified with fear?
Yeah.
The fact that they work for Amy Klobuchar.
They're hiding around the corners. She can't throw binders around corners, right?
Yeah. I was going to do this all morning, man. I was going to try to bring about the applause.
I mean, that's tough. But I mean, here's the deal. She's a United States senator who now in this race is at 1%.
Yeah.
And she probably spends 3 to 4 to 5 hours a day on the phone.
Yes, begging, he does.
Yeah.
Begging for money.
Yes.
I've never had this many applause lines in a speech in your life.
I'm just, oh yeah, I have. Don't you worry about me.
Yes, queen.
Love you. But I'm at the point where I'm starting to like legitimately, like, I'm uncomfortable for her.
I'm kind of with John on this one. You know, she should have known. I mean, we've said it from the get-go.
We knew!
When the rumors were starting and swirling around, she has no business being in this presidential race.
Except there is one and one entity only to be blamed for this. The pathetic Minnesota media.
Yeah.
That's one I deserve.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. You are 100% correct.
They so artificially
adore
her up and built flipping statues for her and worshipped her for nothing.
Yeah. No, you are absolutely right. They adore her.
They built her up and set her free, and she is falling flat on her face.
And I truly believe that she is so used to that kind of treatment that she expected it outside of Minnesota as well. Yeah. She expected everybody to be Esme Murphy.
Did you know that her dad was someone we should all love?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I know.
He had a drinking problem too.
But it didn't have any effect on her attitude towards people later in life.
I heard about
how that caused a strain with her at an early age, but certainly didn't, you know, put her in a position to yell at people for not getting forks for salads and things of that nature.
This is a direct result, though, of all the times that she's had her name artificially floated for Supreme Court vacancies or vice presidential selections or this or that. And every time it was purely a PR move just to sort of float the balloon and get the positive coverage. And then when she could come back, she goes, you know, people have asked me to run for many things, but I just love being a senator from Minnesota.
And we'll keep with this theme a bit with the tale of two stories and Ilhan Omar and her having to reimburse campaign dollars, because the coverage locally, and we're going to hold off on a couple of other stories that we had about downtown. We got time. We'll get into it just after 8 o'clock. But the local version of this recent story that's also gone national is way different than the national version. The national version of the Ilhan Omar story is giving you the full picture. It's amazing just how much the local media just pushes away anything that they think is in their minds too controversial to cover, even though there is some very good evidence pointing towards that controversy.
3.5 FM.
Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Picks are starting to roll in for the Friday news quiz. I'm seeing most of the picks, the majority of picks have gone towards Zerwas, although Sam's getting her fair share of picks. He even got a few Nordo picks in there, which that's a bold move. We'll see if it pays off.
For those of you that picked me, you chose wisely.
We will play the news quiz in about an hour from now, exactly.
Out of the Star Tribune, Tale of Two Stories, this is the local coverage. Minnesota Campaign Finance Public Disclosure Board has ordered U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar to personally reimburse her own campaign account $3,469.23 and pay a civil penalty of $500 for violating state campaign finance rules dating to her time as a member of the state house. Now, the amount of the Minnesota Democrat must repay represents what the board determined is the total amount of campaign funds that Omar used in 16 and 17 for purposes not permitted by the state law.
Such as helping get her divorce finalized.
That includes the payments. Yep. $1,500 to a law firm, her lawyer testified, was related to some corrections made to her personal tax returns that were part of an inquiry into her financial records by a crisis committee.
Right. And there's a lot of stuff being left out here, and we'll fill in some of these blanks as we get through this.
Yeah, the committee was set up to respond to the never-proven allegations that Omar married her own brother as part of an immigration scheme. It's the Star Tribune.
Never proven, or did it say never disproven?
It said never proven. Never proven allegations, which goes But also goes the other way too, because you can't have one without the others. The initial complaints were filed by State Representative Steve Draskowski. Am I saying that right?
Draskowski.
While the board found that some legal costs incurred by Omar were not justifiable as campaign expenses, the investigation also did not find evidence that any of the legal expenses were incurred for her 2017 divorce, as Draskowski alleged in his complaint. Omar said in a prepared statement that she would comply with the findings. Now you switch over, and that's kind of the bulk and the most you're going to get of the controversy coming from the Star Tribune. You get to the Fox News version, and they do get a little bit deeper in here. Additionally, and they say, conservative commentators pointed out.
Put the little qualifier on.
Yeah, so even that, Fox News.
You know, that's the little dog whistle that they throw out there. Just so, okay, you don't really have to pay attention to this next part.
They pointed out that the board's report revealed Omar and her current husband, Ahmed Hirsi, filed joint tax returns in 14 and 15 when Omar was reportedly married to another man.
Yeah, that's called fraud. That's called tax fraud. That's a felony, by the way, FYI. State and federal felony.
That could be a challenge for her moving forward.
I wish I could believe that, though. You know what I mean? It's like, you might be right, and I may be being far too cynical here. But I wish that I could have faith that that would be a challenge for a DFL representative out of CD5 going forward.
Well, to be fair, likely what will happen is she'll sit down with an interview with Esme Mervey, shed a tear, and hug it out. And
yeah.
It'll be fine.
When this happens...
But it should be, you know, allegedly committing a felony should be kind of a disqualifier.
A federal and state felony. When this happens to someone on the left, especially someone who checks, you know, a few of the identity boxes.
All of them.
Typically, the reaction is, it's just made a mistake,
yeah,
and I'm really sorry, and I'm going to learn from this, you know, and that's the important thing, is I'm gonna learn from this, and we're all going to go forward, and we're all going to move forward, and we're going to be better. We're just going to be better. And then the Minnesota media, you know, pulls a Klobuchar, and they clap for her, and then we all are supposed to forget that it ever happened.
Omar engaged in a civil marriage with Ahmed Noor Said Elmi in 2009. The couple separated in 2011. Oh, it was a short marriage. Oh, you know, just, well, you know, sometimes, you know, when you marry your brother, it just doesn't work out the way that you had hoped.
You've got familial and marital
relationships. Yeah, it's tough to make it work.
It's complicated.
It is complicated. It is a little complicated. Allegedly, it is complicated. Without formally petitioning for divorce until 2017. Now, prior to her marriage with Elmi, Omar had reportedly wed Hersey in the Muslim faith tradition, but the couple separated shortly afterwards.
Right, just long enough to get the immigration paper.
That's your brother, allegedly. Omar did not officially marry Hersey until 2018 after reconciling with him and splitting with Elmi. Now, tax experts say the IRS only permits joint filings if a couple is in a state that legally recognizes the couple is married.
Right. There is not, to the best of my knowledge, unmarried filing jointly status.
David Steinberg, who authored a Twitter thread flagging the issue, said a sitting congresswoman may have filed 8 years of fraudulent felonious tax returns. Yes, that's right. Was she been calling for Trump's tax returns to be released out of curiosity, too? So the board found that Omar's campaign bought her a plane ticket to Boston, where she spoke at a political rally, paid for the hotel in D.C., where Omar participated in an interview for the United Nations Foundation's Girl Up conference. That's capital Up. Got to say it that way. Girl Up. And covered her travel to Chicago to accept an award and attend a fundraising luncheon. Yay, he got an award! Yeah, because you're a person.
Good job.
Way to go, human.
Yeah, I wonder if the campaign finance helped pay for getting in that stupid Maroon 5 video.
Under Minnesota law, campaign trips. Oh, the video's good. Her appearance in it is stupid, but I like the video quite a bit. Watched it again yesterday. I just got to close my eyes when she pops up. Under Minnesota law, campaign trips must be related to serving in office. Don't look at me that way, Nick Zerwas. I like watching music videos.
Gosh, just picturing you at home watching that Maroon 5.
Yeah, well, sometimes you got to kill some time. It's like a commercial break when you got to pause the show and you're in between other stuff. So I throw on a couple of videos on YouTube. They know my playlist very well.
All right.
Under Minnesota law, campaign trips must be related to serving in office. Omar was a state representative for Minneapolis at the time of the violations, as she was elected to the U.S. House last November. So,
what bothers me and what annoys me about this is, you know, us, well, just really just like us and Alpha News. I mean, a handful of people around this state have been talking about this, and, you know, she goes through this election with without hardly a trickle of anything critical even said about her. No extensive critical coverage. She gets, you know, coddled all the way through the election. And it isn't until she's already serving in the House. She's already an incumbent. We all know how difficult it is to beat an incumbent. And not only that, but she has a massive, relatively speaking, war chest of money now that have been coming in from around the country because, you know, her and Trump started going at it, and that's one way to get a lot of money from a lot of groups is to become a target of Trump's for a period of time. So now she is going to be exceedingly difficult to oust from that seat and only can be ousted by her own party in the current state of affairs.
Yep.
So where was all this coverage, you know, when it was actually time to decide if she was the right person to send to Congress from CD5?
Well, and they refused to cover her views on BDS
yep.
and Israel in general. Her very anti-Semitic tweets. And so, you know, she quietly, step by step, worked her way towards victory while she had a documented history of talking about Jews hypnotizing the world that the Minnesota media bent over backwards in order not to cover. It was literally a game of political press limbo to see who could go lower in order to not accidentally cover how unqualified and unelectable of a candidate she should have been.
We've got that. Let's also not forget that after she won the primary, shortly after she won the primary, she stopped doing interviews. She wouldn't even talk to the Minnesota media. She wouldn't show up for debates with her opponent.
She didn't need to.
Because she didn't need to. And at some point, wouldn't you think the media would be at least annoyed by that a little bit? And cover that aspect of it as well. But even despite all that, she still got treated with kid gloves.
Never, ever, ever forget one of the most on point and poignant things that Governor Mark Dayton ever said. When he called out after his significant...
Was it I like brown?
Well, that too. After his significant medical issues that did not get covered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, at the Mayo Clinic. The press kind of got their feathers ruffled for the fact that the Dayton administration didn't tell them that he almost died at the Mayo Clinic and was incapacitated for a while. And Governor Dayton's response was that it wasn't his fault because of the lack of intellectual curiosity of the Minnesota media.
Yeah, his response was something like, well, nobody asked.
So never, ever...
Nobody asked.
Ever should be surprised by the fact that the political media in Minnesota, when it comes to specific DFL candidates, go for a don't ask, don't tell policy. It's better off if we don't ask the question, because if we hear something negative, then we'll be compelled to report it. So let's never even ask.
Yeah.
Don't look under that rock for fear of what we might find.
We got the governor of the state incapacitated. Nobody's heard from him. Nobody has any information. And just think about that for a second. Nobody asked.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Keeping with the theme of wasted money. Story out of Star Tribune. Andrew Zimmern, the Minnesotan famous for eating giraffe beetles, sauteed bumblebees, and other insects on TV, was paid.
Is that all he's famous for?
Was paid to promote Minnesota as a tourism destination in the past year, according to a review of state records. He was paid $57,000 to do just that.
Was there something expected in return for this money?
Zimmern's contract, which ends this month, required two posts per month to reach more than 1 million Twitter and other social media followers while also appearing at and promoting the State Fair cooking contest.
Why did we pay for 24 Twitter posts?
Social media influencer Zimmerman. Yeah,
he's how much?
Yeah, 24 Twitter posts, 57 grand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do some math here.
That's like 2,200, 2,300
per post.
He's actually getting 30% more pay than Minnesota legislators who earn $45,000.
Yeah, that's $2,375 per post.
What is it per character?
And do we even know if he fulfilled his end of the bargain?
But again, do not forget that Andrew Zimmern posted time and time again 2 years ago about how excited he was for Ilhan Omar to be elected, how excited he was for for Hillary Clinton to be the first female president.
No.
So
poor Zimmern.
We pay tax dollars for a far-left media darling to... Media darling.
I love how in the article it says here, the social media influencer campaign that he was involved in, but the total, a little more than $90,000 was a small portion of the agency's $14 million budget, about three-fourths of which is spent on marketing.
Well, I know 50 grand, that's right? Go the right way.
Well, and the, and look, I do get the value when it comes to influencers. Zimmer's the Zimmer promotion of Minnesota via the hashtag OnlyNMN was part of a broader effort by Explore Minnesota, the state's travel and tourism bureau, to use new and widely accepted marketing techniques to draw more visitors, boosting tourism revenue, state coffers, and even persuade newcomers to move here. The problem here is that there's little to, in this case, like with other social media influencers, and Sam, I'm sure you can speak to this, with other social media influencers, especially product wise, you can directly track, like if you've got an Instagram social media influencer pushing a new cosmetic product, that cosmetic product creator can easily go and track whether or not that particular individual's post on Instagram caused a spike in their sales online. When it comes to this guy, how do you track, right, if this had any effect whatsoever on bringing tourism to, I mean, it's impossible to do. I mean, it's nearly impossible to do.
Yeah.
When I go and try to sell my books, I've got different campaigns that I run, and I've got ads that run on Amazon. I put ads up on Facebook, and even then, with all the data that's available, it's really hard for me to tell what particular outlet that I'm using. I have to zero it down to one single campaign for a series of days, and then track whether or not that single campaign, say like on Instagram, actually went and yielded sales. I have no idea how you would track whether or not this guy's promotion and this expenditure of almost $60,000 yielded any tourism results.
Let me break it down for you. It didn't.
Okay, cool. 651-989-5855. We'll get to more of Justice and Drew coming up. You still have an opportunity to let us know who you think is going to win the news quiz right around 8:35 this morning using the hashtag TCNT. Should you like prop up Nordo a bit? Because like people are defaulting, but they don't know if he's got any prowess at all. So, like, he could be a dark horse in this whole thing. No offense to Sam or Nick.
I don't know what to
expect. You don't know either. Okay.
I know Nordo used to work on the station. He worked with me before. So, and I know he pays attention to current events. I know he's on top of, you know, what's going on in the world. I don't know to what extent. I have no idea what to expect from Nordo.
I've met Nordo. I know Nordo.
Yeah.
Don't put your mind with Nordo.
I might change my pick from Nick to Nordo now.
We will tell you coming up.
What about me?
Where the Minneapolis Park Board is considering forcing traffic to take detours. Nick, I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this. The drug overdoses have been, I mean, they've even spiked since yesterday. We've had 163 overdoses in Minnesota, 14 fatal in the past 2 weeks alone.